News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Happy New Year to you. I know it sounds a little bit weird to be saying Happy New Year when we're already, you know, 6 days into the new year, but it's my first time getting to talk to all of you since the new year started. So I hope your new year is going well. Hope you're ready for a great, in Pensacola, I don't even know if you can say post-holiday season, because we get out of Christmas and New Year's, we roll right into Mardi Gras, baby. So, I mean, we're into Mardi Gras season now. We got Pensacon right around the corner. The fun doesn't stop in Pensacola. We're going to help continue the fun as we bring you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. And actually, today we're going to look back at everything that went on in entertainment and pop culture in 2023. Joining me to do so, please welcome from the Pop Culture Knowledge channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
It is wild to think that we did this list, I mean, obviously, a year ago, but it feels like in some ways it was like 3 months ago. I can remember talking about some of both of our most anticipated, and maybe some of those turned out the way that we had hoped for, and other ones not so much, but I swear as I get older, years just get shorter and shorter and shorter, and it's as if, like, time just flies by. So definitely look ahead to your 2024. Make sure you live it well, and hope you're doing good with those resolutions here 6 days into the new year.
Well, you know, somebody, a friend of mine had a theory. We talked about this on social media over the last couple of days. Like, I was in a couple of days before Christmas. I was out looking for Christmas candy for the Christmas stockings. You couldn't practically find any Christmas candy anywhere. It was all gone. Not only that, like most stores had the Valentine's candy out already. I'm talking like a week before Christmas. They had the Valentine's candy out. Walmart had the Mardi Gras decorations out. Go into CVS. Not only did they have Valentine's stuff out, they had Easter stuff out. And I'm like, really? Wow. And then, you know, we're talking about this on social media. A friend of mine says, that's why it feels like time flies by so fast, because commerce and marketing is trying to push us so far ahead to the next money spending opportunity that you don't have time to enjoy the one you're in, where you already feel like you're rushing to the next one.
That is a really interesting point. And it's one of those things, like the minute Halloween ends, now it's Christmas time. And to your point, the minute that Christmas ends, now it's on to Valentine's Day.
Oh, it's not even that good.
I mean,
you
go,
you find Christmas stuff in Walmart by mid-September. Like, they're already starting up like their Christmas shop. And that's not even talking, like, if you go to like a hobby shop, if you go to like, you know, like a Michael's or Joann's or a place like that. I don't know if you ever have a reason to frequent places like that, but I've got artsy people in my family, so I do. Yeah, and I kind of get it, because, you know, if you're making something handmade, homemade, it takes a little time and you need that stuff a little earlier. But like, that stuff's in the stores by like August.
Who is out here buying Christmas stuff in August? I envy that person. I'm running in there December 19th trying to scratch everybody off my list. So anybody that's getting that much a head start, I got respect for them just for having enough foresight to, like, I don't know, plan ahead.
Yeah, I guess so. Instead of looking ahead, we're going to look back, like I said today. We're going to look back at our top movies of 2023. And Jeremy and I have both made lists, and we'll trade off on appearances on the list over the course of the show. Want to mention, of course, you know, we're getting close to the Oscar nominations coming out in just a few weeks. There are films that are going to be in that roundup of movies that we're not going to talk about today. Now, some of them are going to be because they just haven't played here in Pensacola yet. I know I've been very much looking forward to seeing Poor Things. We haven't gotten that on a Pensacola screen yet. Been looking forward to American Fiction. That has not opened in Pensacola yet. There are films like that that I can't put on my list because I haven't had a chance to put them into my eyeballs yet. They may very well.
Happens every year. You know, this is a conversation that we've had before, is like, how many movies come out in a year? It's way more than there are days available in the year. So inevitably, there are going to be movies that we overlook. And if they're on your top favorite list, let us know in the comments. Let us know. Email Julio so that we can kind of carry on the discussion. Maybe there's some suggestions or recommendations that neither of us have heard of. So just know as we get into this, neither of us are just completely dedicated to watching six movies a day, as much as I'm sure we both love to do that.
Hey, somebody wants to pay me, I'll be glad to be a full-time movie critic. I'm here for it.
Absolutely. You
know, email me at gopensacola@gmail.com. I am available. I'm cheap.
I'd say.
Yeah. But, that being said, there are, of course, a number of movies that actually did play in Pensacola for a while or that have come just to streaming that I just haven't gotten around to. So films that, like, you're going to see on a lot of lists that, unfortunately, you're not going to see on mine that I'll just mention right now. And I will probably get to these before the Oscars. So when we do get around to talking about the Oscars, I may be talking about these films having now seen them and placing them above some of the films we're talking about now. But films like The Holdovers, Past Lives, Saltburn, May December, The Maestro. I haven't gotten to see any of those films yet. I don't know if you have, Jeremy.
I saw one or two that may come up on the list. Did you see Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
I did, actually, and that just misses my top 10. That was really good. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to catch it in theaters.
I gotta check that one out.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to catch it in theaters, but I did see it on a plane, and that's actually my number 11. So
just edged out.
Just missed my top 10. And I have not seen as much critical buzz for that as I would like to. It did get really great reviews, but it's not one I've seen cropping up in a lot of the awards lists. So we'll see how that ends up going.
So another one that's on my list that I haven't seen that I just refuse to watch out of principle is Napoleon. Not that I think it's a bad movie. And in fact, Ridley Scott is a fantastic filmmaker. He makes just as many timeless classics as he does stinkers. But I refuse to watch this one because I already know there's like a 4-hour extended cut coming out. So I'm waiting for that one. So maybe it'll show up on my list. Who knows? But as of right now.
Well, you know what? I did see it and I don't know that I want to see a 4-hour version of this movie, man. It just was like, the acting was good, but man, is this movie just like plodding I just did not connect with this movie at all. And it does not rate very high on my list at all. It's not in my top 10.
All right.
It's been in my top 25. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I did see 51 movies over the course of the year. So it is below the medium mark on that.
So do you have some shout outs of movies that kind of just missed your list or you want to bring attention to before we do get into it in the next segment?
Well, before we do that, do you have a pick for worst?
You put me on the spot, and I honestly couldn't tell you what it is. I can tell you that whatever it is, there was a worst movie made. So take from that what you will. What do you got?
Man, it's a movie that I think was very polarizing because I know there are people that just absolutely loved this movie and just thought it was brilliant. And I don't know what the hell is wrong with those people.
No. Is it what? Oh, okay. Hit me.
It's Skinamarink.
Sure.
movie was just unwatchable as far as I'm concerned. It was just like, there's nothing on the screen for 90% of it. You're like looking at corners and angles and there's like half heard stuff. It's like, no. It just doesn't.
It
might work.
It's a vibe.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a bad vibe.
I 100% understand that pick. A couple that didn't make my list that I just think are cool that I kind of want to
talk
is the movie Influencer. You can find it on Shudder. It was pretty cool. Dungeons and Dragons was a lot of fun.
That's just outside my top 10.
Probably not high up on my list.
Just outside my top 10. Oh. Yeah.
Infinity Pool, Cronenberg's son, David Cronenberg's son, whatever his name is, he did Infinity Pool this year.
Mm-hmm.
Really good, really interesting. Which one is it?
No, I was agreeing with you.
Okay. The Killer, David Lynch's David Fincher's most recent film available on Netflix. Thought that was fantastic, and then I'm sure we'll talk about this one, or I assume we'll talk about this one, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Also, a great movie that I really enjoyed in the theaters. So
we will,
a couple that didn't quite make the list.
We'll get to that one. We've got to take a break. Listen, Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Some stones. I asked if we could be alone. I had some troubles of my own. Knew I had to say goodbye to all the old things held inside. If I let the moment fly, I knew they'd all be magnified. And it feels alright. And it feels alright. Not a choice I tried to make. It's not a fault I couldn't take. Something told me it was time to give you yours and leave me mine. My vision started to be clear. I watched the sunlight coming near. A new day, I knew the night. I knew I could regain my sight.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. We're going to be taking a look back at the best movies of 2023 here on today's show. We're also going to be taking a look back in our bumper music at some artists that we lost this year. And that was one of them, unfortunately. Vivian Trimble, who was the keyboard player in Luscious Jackson, amazing band, unfortunately passed away in 2023. So just give a little shout out to some of those folks that maybe we didn't necessarily do a big thing about them when they passed, that definitely deserve to be remembered as we go on into this new year. So Jeremy, I think we want to just kind of do the same format we've done on this kind of thing in the past, where, you know, I think we each have a top 10 list. So we'll kind of swap off. So give me your number 10 film of 2023.
So every year needs at least one good breakout horror film. Ideally, it's by an up-and-coming filmmaker, maybe somebody that hasn't been established yet, that just really resonates with both critics and audiences. And to me, this year, where, like, you know, when Ari Aster came onto the scene with Hereditary, people took note. And this year, I think the Australian film Talk to Me was one of those movies. It's a simple premise. It's got great performances. The brothers that directed the film, whose names are escaping me right now, started on YouTube. They hired all Australian actors. Everybody in the film was so good, in particular Sophia Wilde and who played the son. Anyways, really cool movie. Iconic image, you know, that hand that's just, I feel like, going to become a instantly recognizable horror thing. I know they're working on a sequel. So anyways, my number 10 is Talk to Me. I know that you and I didn't quite have the same reaction to it. What do you think about Talk to Me?
Yeah, well, and the sequel is also going to be called Talk to Me, except they're going to replace the word two with a number two, which...
Brilliant.
Okay, if you say so. Yeah,
Filippo Brothers.
The Filippo Brothers. I'm nowhere near as big on this film as you are. It was fine. Actually, I think my opinion of it has kind of gone up a little bit since I initially saw it, but it still was not anything that I thought was truly special. I do have a horror movie in my top 10, but it's not this one.
Did Talk to Me break your top 20?
No.
moving along. All right, what's your number 10?
My number 10 is a movie called Polite Society. I don't know if you got to see this one, Jeremy, but it's a little quirky. It's a little out there, but I really loved it. It is a film about two sisters living in the UK who are of, I believe, Pakistani or it might be Indian descent. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'm remembering it correctly. But they're very, very close. And one of them wants to be a stunt woman. And she has these kind of flights of fancy about, you know, things that go on in her life. But it turns out that she's not wrong. And she believes that there's a conspiracy surrounding stealing her sister away from her. And it turns out that she's actually right about it. Just great martial arts in this movie. Just a really fun sense of adventure and action, comedy, and kind of an up and coming cast. I think the one who might be best known from it is Ritu Aryu, who is on the Umbrella Academy, who plays the older of the two sisters, the one that's getting married. The younger sister, played by Priya Kansara. This was written and directed by Nita Manzoor. I'm really going to be looking out for what she does in the future. Really love this movie.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I did see it. It resonated with me. It felt a little slight, I guess, for lack of a better term, as far as making it onto my top 10, but I could easily see it working its way into my top 20. Like you said, the lead performances and the chemistry between the sisters was just a lot of fun. I think it's a cool kind of genre mashup. And how often do you see movies where, young female characters want to be stunt people?
Mm-hmm.
And then with the choreography and the action and all of that, it was a good time.
Well, and you know what? You're saying that it's slight. I don't necessarily disagree with that. Yeah, there is when I make these lists, there's a few things that weigh in. I do look at just the overall quality of the movie and the critical acclaim and that kind of thing. But some of it is just what hits me personally as stuff that I dig.
Absolutely.
And this is a movie that's just right in my wheelhouse personally. So, do I rate it higher than a lot of other people might? Probably. But
absolutely fair.
You know, that's in the end, personal taste does come into play in these things. So,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So
I don't think it's quantifiable.
No.
What you like the most is what you like the most. And I like that idea for a top 10 list way better than I like the idea of like, well, these are going to be the ones that get nominated with the Oscars and stuff like that. So I'm glad I made it on there.
It's difficult to do that. And it's also difficult to quantify. And when you're ranking anything, it has a tendency of making some things look like they're better than the others, which is not necessarily the case. I know I had posted my full list of every movie that I saw over the course of the year on Facebook and had some people quibbling with some things. And it's like, all right, you had this movie at number 27. I was like, yeah, but really that movie's not any realistically worse than the movie I had at number 15. It's just that they've got to fall somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're both good movies. It's just this one I liked a little bit better than that one. And there were five or six more that I liked a little bit better than that one or whatever, So it falls into that place. Just to give you the example that came up when somebody was saying, how can you rate Evil Dead Rise only number 27 and you've got The Flash at number 17? It's like, yeah, but like that's like they're like tied for number 17. I liked Evil Dead Rise. It doesn't just because it's so low on my list doesn't mean I didn't like it. I liked it a lot. Just there are other things I like better. That simple.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
my number 9 is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem.
So that,
and look, I probably could have put Across the Spider-Verse in this same place, but because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was something new, it's hitting my number 9. I love this movie, Julio.
Are you telling me Across the Spider-Verse is not in your top 10?
I would not bury the lead like that, but what I will say is I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem owes a whole lot of debt of gratitude to what they did with both Into and Across the Spider-Verse. While I think the art styles are like distinct and dissimilar enough for it not to feel derivative, you can absolutely see how the Spider-Verse movies informed what they did with Mutant Mayhem. But I just thought it was so fun. Love the cast. Love that they actually used kids this time around. I also thought it was really cool that, like, every Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle action figure that I used to love gets a slight update in this movie. And great pacing, a lot of fun. I liked a lot of the pop culture references. I think it was just a blast in the theater. Saw it twice.
So I'm going to agree with you on the obvious debt that it owes to the Spider-Verse movies in terms of what I've seen from the art style in the trailers. I can only base it on the trailers because I actually haven't seen this one yet. This is another one that I've been meaning to get to. I know it's on Paramount Plus right now. It's just I haven't gotten to it yet. So I'm not dismissing this movie, but it's not on my list.
It's a very good one. I think you'll like it.
Okay, fair enough. I mentioned I did have a horror movie on my list, and that is my number 9 movie for the year. And that is When Evil Lurks. Which is
great pick.
A Spanish film written and directed by Demian Rugna. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. This was a film that was kind of made the rounds at the festivals and was picked up by Shudder and just got kind of an incidental theatrical release. And came out in a week where there wasn't much coming out, didn't know what to expect from it, but man, did this movie have an impact. There's so many bad demonic possession movies out there that it's just become just this rote thing. This movie actually made demonic possession scary again. It was unlike a movie I saw last night called Night Swim, which is just, you know, I don't even know if that was demonic possession. That's another story altogether. But for a supernatural horror movie, I think they have a high bar to clear. This one cleared it. It's really gruesome. It's really grim. It is not an upbeat, feel-good popcorn movie. But man, is it a good movie.
Yeah, leaving an impact. I couldn't agree more. This is easily in my top 5 movies of the year. And while that's not to diminish horror, it's just to say there were several movies this year that were just really freaking good. But there are a couple scenes in this movie that are so shocking and so subversive that you would have to see it to believe it. I think there's this kind of just real dark irony to it, and you can definitely read it as being one of the more disturbing movies of the year. I also think there's a little bit of that kind of like Sam Raimi, so dark and so grim that it's kind of funny in different parts of it. But I love this movie. I think there's some really good subtext if you read interviews with the filmmaker. I think that's a great pick, Julio. I like that one.
Yeah, like I said, real big fan of that movie. Hit me with your number 8, Jeremy.
So my number 8 is a number 4. It is John Wick, Chapter 4. And I think there are lots of conversations to be had about what makes a movie good. And if we're talking just from the technical aspects of it alone, I think John Wick 4 is one of the most impressive movies ever made. It is so brilliantly choreographed and shot, and there's some really creative choices, like this extended overhead sequence that almost makes it feel like you're playing a video game. And I feel like Keanu Reeves was just born to play this role. It is a very long big movie, but I think in the best ways possible. And to say that John Wick 4 is my favorite of the John Wick movies, I don't think is an exaggeration. Like, this movie was just awesome, and can't recommend it highly enough.
Just missed my top 10, but a great, great movie. I agree. I've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Daylight clothes, or is it just my daylight song? What I do ain't make believe. People say I sit and try, but when it comes to being daylight, it's just me, myself, and I. 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 Now you tease my.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, and we are looking back at the best movies of 2023. We're also looking back at, with our bumper music, at some people that we lost this year. And unfortunately, we lost Trugoy the Dove from De La Soul. Amazing, innovative rap trio that just made such brilliant music. Man, that one was a tough loss to take. We lost him early in the year last year. But we're going to move past that to my number 8 movie of the year. This is probably the most controversial choice in my top 10, Jeremy. I know the opinions on this one. I know the opinions on this one have been very mixed. And I'm not
I'm looking forward to this.
I am not a completist with this filmmaker at all. I know there's a lot of people that have just like ravenously consumed everything this filmmaker did and didn't think that this was one of his best, but I really liked it. I'm talking about Wes Anderson, and the film is Asteroid City.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Wes Anderson definitely has a particular style and a particular aesthetic. I think that aesthetic was on full display in this movie, but I really think that it especially was heightened with this whole like post-World War II nuclear anxiety. It's a theme that's going to come up a lot in today's list, I think.
With
that like mid-century aesthetic that there was to it, and like in that, there's also that whole like Roswell alien invasion part of it that's going on as well. Absolutely killer cast with just some amazing actors in this, and I thought took some real chances. I really like this movie. I know there are people that are down on it, but I'm here for it.
If you don't like Quentin Tarantino's style, you're not going to like Quentin Tarantino's next movie. I say that to say it's almost kind of not fair that Wes Anderson should be deemed for having a distinct aesthetic, and like it's unmistakably a Wes Anderson movie. I haven't loved all of them, and I'm not a completionist that has seen every one of them and loves them all, but I'm definitely eager to check this one out, and now I feel like I got even more reason to.
All right, well, what's your number 7?
Number 7. I think I saw this on Netflix. I don't even remember getting a theatrical release. Maybe I just didn't notice when it happened. Maybe it didn't get a wide release to where we got it here in Pensacola. But my number 7 is They Cloned Tyrone.
I believe that was
stars.
Yeah, I believe that was direct to Netflix, if I'm not mistaken.
It is so good. It is so good. It stars John Boyega, Jamie Foxx. I'm not going to be able to think of her name right now. But Monica Rambeau, right?
Teyana Paris.
Yeah, Teyana Paris. And it's really cool. It's like a science fiction spin on the blaxploitation film. I love good subtext in a movie, and I think this one has got some really interesting things to say about society. But more importantly than that, it's just a lot of fun. It's some of the best acting I've seen Jamie Foxx do in a while, where I'm just like, oh man, he is the perfect person for this role. And the way that it ends is just, it's just super smart. I thought this movie was so much fun. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, I need to get around to that one. That's another one I've heard nothing but good things about, but I haven't gotten a chance to see it yet. So that's you've made me put that back on my I need to get around to watching that list. My number 7 is a film you mentioned earlier in the show, just missed your top 10, and that is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
It's a good one.
I will say, you know, again, this, as I mentioned before, some of this is just about stuff that falls into your wheelhouse. And James Gunn, man, for me, he's one of my favorite filmmakers. Just as far as I'm concerned, the man can do really no wrong. Like everything he's done, like he's a filmmaker that gets me, for lack of a better term. That being said,
it's really interesting. Go ahead.
That being said, I think that, you know, he has built this family with these characters in this series of movies, and that he stuck the landing with us. He gave, you know, a heartfelt resolution for all these characters. Mm-hmm. There's so much emotion in this movie. This is not just a superhero movie. This is not just a Marvel movie. And I think you could say that about all three of the Guardians movies and the Guardians Holiday Special. And I don't think that these movies have gotten, even though they've all gotten good reviews, I don't think they've gotten the critical appreciation that they truly deserve. I really do believe that The first one should have been an Academy Award nominee, and it was, I'm still mad that it wasn't. And I think that all of them, you know, deserve something. You know what I mean? They just deserve something.
Absolutely. And it's like, I feel like Guardians 3 was, you know, a victim of what many would refer to as either superhero or Marvel fatigue. But on the same hand, I almost feel like you could say it's the best of the Guardians films. And of course, there's strings attached to that. We've really gotten to know and love these characters over the course of the MCU, so the payoffs seem even more significant. But I feel like this is the, like, just the best send-off for those characters. So I agree with everything you said. This is a very good movie, and even if not critically appreciated, I think culturally people know that just the Guardians movies are freaking great. So I co-sign that one. My number six is a film that I hear people make a lot of jokes about. I think this was kind of the year of the corporate biopic or the dad movie in a lot of ways, but I thought that Air was fantastic. This is the movie that stars Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. It's directed by Ben Affleck, and it's about the creation of the Air Jordan sneakers. So Michael Jordan doesn't get like a prominent role in the movie, which some people might say is blasphemous. I actually respect the reason why they chose not to use him.
Is he even on screen in the film? I thought I heard that he's not even, I haven't seen it. I thought I heard that he's not even on screen in the film.
You see the back of his head maybe in one scene. So yes, he is not even shown because they didn't think that anybody could have the same presence and charisma of Michael Jordan. So they were just like, it would just be better to not even do that. But it's just one of those feel good movies, has a lot of parallels with your typical sports films and that structure. And it's just like the win feels so earned at the end. And I've never seen Matt Damon that I can think of, that's done anything less than just a stellar, understated performance. He's never like the biggest actor on screen as far as, you know, big emotional outbursts or anything like that or big crying scenes, but he's just low key one of the best actors of our generation. I think this is a great, you know, showcase of that.
Well, and we're about to talk about another one of the best actors of his generation because my number six is Killers of the Flower Moon, which stars, of course, Leonardo DiCaprio, who I think has kind of a thankless role in this, which he kind of chose for himself. He wanted to be the, you know, for lack of a better term, the bad guy in this movie. And he is a complex bad guy, but is kind of a bad guy, kind of a hapless scumbag. In a sense.
Yeah.
I think the real star of this movie is Lily Gladstone, and her performance is just fantastic. This is a long movie. It's not a movie that I'm sure think that I will ever want to watch again just because it's so depressing, but it's so well made and it's so beautiful, you know, that everybody that's involved deserves all the accolades that they're getting and are going to get for this movie. So, you know, it's Scorsese. Scorsese really can't do any wrong. So that's my number six. Hit me with your number five.
So one that is probably going to be coming up again is Godzilla Minus One.
Yes, it is.
You and I saw this movie together. It is Toho's first film back since Shin Godzilla, which I think came out in 2016. Give or take a couple years. I'm not positive on that.
Right.
But in a way, it feels like Toho keeps getting put in a situation where they have to react to what Legendary has been doing with their MonsterVerse movies, Shin following up the 2014 Godzilla, this movie coming on the heels of a greater MonsterVerse that we've seen expanded. And what I really like about it is it takes the best elements of the entire legacy of Toho. It takes the best visual elements that Gareth Edwards brought to the screen with the 2014 Godzilla. It's got mind-blowingly good special effects and a really character-driven story, which is something Legendary just has failed time and time again to get right. To touch on what you said about it being kind of Atomic Age themed and set in the era of post-World War II, it's just, it was so well done. Love the way that they portrayed Godzilla. There's just some really, really great set pieces in this movie, and I'm a huge fan. I saw it a couple times in theaters. I'm sure when it comes out to be able to stream at the house, I'll be watching it even more. So that's my number five.
Written, directed, and visual effects by Takashi Yamazaki. And the American studios need to grab him up. He is a great filmmaker, and I want to see him actually have... They made this movie for less than $15 million, and it looks like a $100 million movie. I want to see what he does next.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, just an incredible film. My number five is what I thought was the funniest movie of the year, absolutely, which is called Bottoms.
Gotta see this.
Really great, like, coming-of-age satirical comedy that's... was directed by Emma Seligman, that she co-wrote it with the star Rachel Sennett, also starring Ayo Edebiri, and a really great supporting role. It was amazingly funny. Marshawn Lynch, the football player, these two high school girls who set up a fight club as a way to hook up with cheerleaders. They're both lesbians. It is an outrageous comedy, and I just laughed my butt off at this movie. Absolutely cannot recommend it highly enough. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. One more artist we lost this year, unfortunately, Andy Rourke, the bass player from The Smiths. Absolute legend. I want to just bid him a little tip of the cap as we move on to continue discussing our top films of 2023. Jeremy, hit me with your number four.
So we just now spoke about it, and for the sake of expediting this last segment, Killers of the Flower Moon. It was on my top anticipated movies of 2023. Here we are looking back at the year, and yeah, it broke my top five favorites, so that's pretty good. What about you?
My number four movie of the year is a film that if you had told me a couple of years ago was going to be in my top 50 films of the year, I probably would have laughed at you and said you're crazy. But it is the number one film of the year, Barbie.
Made it way up your list.
Never did I imagine in a million years that they would make a Barbie movie that was actually this good. You just think, okay, they're making a movie out of a plastic doll. But that was before they put Greta Gerwig in charge of it. And as soon as they put Greta Gerwig in charge of this movie, I was a lot more interested because she's a brilliant filmmaker. And she has proven that again in this film that she directed and she co-wrote with her partner, Noah Baumbach. It's just such a smart and funny movie that has so much to say. And the acting in it is fantastic. Everybody just knocked this one out of the park. It is so much better than it had a right to be. The aesthetic is genius. Love this movie.
Yeah, I just don't know that we will ever be able to say, and this is unfortunate, that Greta Gerwig's version is better than Amy Schumer's version where she stars as Barbie. So I guess all we can really do is speculate, you know?
You know what? My speculation is going to be that it is. I like Amy Schumer. I do. I've liked a lot of stuff that she's done, but I have it in my head what an Amy Schumer Barbie movie would be, and it's just not even... comparable. It's just not even the same kind of thing. Just
no,
that simple.
To each their own. I think Amy Schumer sucks, but we'll move on.
Yeah, well,
my number three is one that I know that you haven't seen, and I suspect that you will really enjoy it when you do. polite society, maybe a slight movie in the same way that I think The Holdovers is. The Holdovers is directed by Alexander Payne. It reunites him with Paul Giamatti, who he was with in 2004's Sideways, and it's kind of the quintessential indie movie. It's what I would think of when I think of indie films, and I thought it was just really kind of touching. It's the story of a curmudgeon-y professor and his budding friendship with a student of his when they're kind of forced to be stuck together over a Christmas holiday. So really fun, really cool, good sense of humor. I thought this was a really good and touching movie.
Yeah, it's one I've been meaning to get to, and I know it's on streaming. I'm sure I'm going to like this movie. I know there's been a lot of praise in particular for Divine Joy Randolph's role in the film. There's a lot of praise for supporting actress. So we will see. I know I will get around to this one sometime in the next few weeks. So once we get started talking about Oscar nominations and things like that, I'm sure we will be talking about that movie again. Speaking of films that I think we'll definitely be talking about in Oscar nominations, my number three film is a film that I'm pretty sure is going to win the Best Animated Feature Oscar this year, and that is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Once again, just these animators and these folks at Sony have just knocked this one out of the park. Just an even more brilliant use of this animated style and these varied animated styles that they put together in one movie and still make them look cohesive. You've got so many different varied art styles that come together and interact with each other and yet somehow still work. And all of that would be great if all we were thinking about was visuals here. If all we were thinking about is visuals here, I might be talking about the new Hayao Miyazaki movie or something like that, which is, and that's fine too. But this movie just has story and heart and stakes and character, and you care about everybody in this movie, even when they're at odds with each other. It's more than just a great animated film. It's a great film, period. And I recognize there are some people that are going to knock a little bit off of it for being, you know, kind of a part one of a two part in that it is also the second chapter of a trilogy. But you know what? So is The Empire Strikes Back. So you know what? This movie's
yeah,
great.
There's no taking away from this. There is a multiverse where this was number one on my list. Absolutely. I love that extended Gwen Stacy intro. It's super cool. Definitely love that movie. Can't believe it's not my top 10. What was I thinking? My number two is, it's going to be everybody's number one. It is very hard to argue that this isn't just almost objectively the best movie that came out this year, at least as far as I've seen.
You're going to hurt me.
Of course, I'm talking about Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer.
Yeah, that hurts, man. That is my number one, in fact.
How could it not be? It's phenomenal.
So explain to me how it cannot be your number one. First of all, tell me about what you love about this movie, and then we'll talk about why it's not at the top of your list.
Okay, so Christopher Nolan is just immaculate. We were talking about what a great Scorsese is. We mentioned Ridley Scott. I don't think there's anybody that just consistently knocks it out of the park like Christopher Nolan does. I even love Tenet, but so many good performances in this movie. I like a lot of the stylistic choices that he made. Cillian Murphy just continues to blow me away as one of the greatest performers of our day that really doesn't get the kind of recognition he deserves. But it's just immaculate. There is like literally no flaws in this movie. I think the pacing is perfect. It is a breezy 3 hour and some change movie that never felt like a slog, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, you compare this to, I mean, even Killers of the Flower Moon, which, as I said, is a brilliant movie and deserves your respect and deserves to be seen. I can't see sitting through Killers of the Flower Moon again, and it is long and it is hard to get through. This is long and it's heavy and there's heavy subject matter, but I could see myself watching Oppenheimer a couple more times easily. And compare it to something like we talked about Napoleon earlier in the show. There's no way I'm sitting through Napoleon again, but this movie is just, and I think a big part of it is the strength of the cast and the strength of the performances, not just Cillian Murphy, who is my pick for best actor right now. My pick for best supporting actor right now is Robert Downey Jr. in this film.
Good pick.
He is just so good in this movie, like to the point where you forget that that's who you're watching. One of the biggest movie stars in the world, and he just disappears into this performance. You know, and then you add to the rest of the cast, and you know, there's some big people in small roles in this. When you got somebody like Jack Quaid, who's in the film for like 5 minutes, you've got, you know, and you see that in some other movies too. Florence
Josh
Pugh
Peck
has,
of all things, has a 20-second role in it.
Yeah, Florence Pugh has a small but pivotal and very memorable role in this movie. You know, it's just it's just outstanding. And as far as I'm concerned, nothing has topped it for this year for me. So, spoilers, that's my number one. My number two, we already talked about, was Godzilla Minus One. So again, yeah, my number one and number two are both films that have to do with the development of the nuclear bomb and the devastation of Hiroshima and what came after, which is kind of a weird thing, but that's just how it worked out. So it's all yours, Jeremy. You got to hit me with something that wasn't even in my top 10, obviously. What's your number one movie of the year?
So your mind, along with most critics, is probably too feeble to even comprehend what a true work of genius this movie is.
Oh, God.
And, of course, I'm talking about the visionary filmmaker Zack Snyder and his movie Rebel Moon.
You can't even say it with a straight face. I heard you laughing. You can't even say it with a straight face. I actually haven't seen Rebel Moon yet. I'm actually, like, you're talking about waiting for the director's cut on Napoleon. Believe it or not, I think I'm waiting for the director's cut on Rebel Moon because there is one coming.
Yeah, same. So, look, Oppenheimer, objectively, just across the board, people will agree it is one of the greatest movies that's come out this year. Something a little more specific, something that kind of, as we were talking about earlier, speaks to individual taste, is a movie called Sanctuary, which was actually released limited back in 22, but didn't come out until 2023. You can stream it on Hulu. It is directed by a person named Zachary Wigan. I believe this was their debut. It stars Margaret Qualley, who had a small role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And then it stars Christopher Abbott, who starred in one of Cronenberg's last movies called The Possessor, or Possessor. Anyways, it is the story of a dominatrix and her relationship with a guy that is about to inherit a hotel chain from his father, and it is all taking place in this one hotel room over the course of one night. It feels like it could be a stage play, and those two performances and just the way that they play off of each other, so kinetic. It's amazing how well the entire thing is like staged and shot, and it keeps you guessing until what I think was the absolute best payoff of a movie that I've seen all year. So if I could condense it down to just one moment, it's where all roads lead to this just really great line at the end of the movie. And it is absolutely brilliant. I don't suspect a lot of people have seen it. Maybe that makes it a little more precious to me as well, but I really think you would love this movie.
Yeah, it got a very limited release back in May and then came out on streaming in June. So really it was blink and you'll miss it in theaters. And I don't think it ever played Pensacola. So I have not seen that one yet. But we'll have to check that out. And there you have it, folks. There are our top 10 movies for the year. Hope you get a chance to seek some of these out and enjoy them if you haven't seen them already. Next week, we're going to get into the best TV of 2023. So we will talk to you then. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.